and have belonged to Castro's 26th of July movement. Some of the Cuban blood that has spilled on the streets, the lives lost, have been at their hands too. Either directly or indirectly, he's been responsible for those deaths. How can I admire such a man? How can I care for him? Isn't Castro in the mountains? Shouldn't you be with him now? What are you doing in Havana? He's silent for a long time.
I was with him in the mountains for a while. I was needed here. It's best if you don't know why.
What happens if you are caught?
They question me. Throw me in prison.
Shoot you?
He doesn't flinch. Maybe. Probably.
He takes my hand, lacing our fingers together, his gaze on me. He leans forward, shattering the distance between us, his voice lowering again.
If you don't want to see me again, if you can't understand...
His voice trails off.
My family...
Emotion splinters the words.
My family wanted no part of this either. Wanted no part of me now that this is my life. I understand. They've gone to America. To Florida. We don't speak.
I'm sorry. That must be hard for you. I can't imagine my life without my family.
It is.
When my brother... I take a deep breath. How much will I trust him with? How much of myself, of my family, should I give? Pablo just shared enough to see himself hanged. Can you have a relationship where you exist in half measures? Or does the very nature of love demand you throw yourself into it with gusto? It's been hard on everyone. I twist the white linen napkin around in my hands. He wants nothing to do with our parents. The money, his legacy of running our family sugar company.
He's with the Directorio Revolucionario Estudiantil, Pablo says.
The DRE, who a year ago stormed the presidential palace and attempted to assassinate President Batista. With the death of their leader, José Antonio Echevarría, after he took part in an assault at the national radio station of Cuba, the group all but collapsed, many of its members choosing to join the 26th of July fighting in the mountains. My brother has remained in Havana with his friends who refused to join Fidel and his men. My stomach clenches.
Yes.
How did you...
I asked around. Discreetly, of course.
My eyes narrow. My parents have told everyone he's studying in Europe. Everyone thinks he's studying in Europe.
The people who know of your brother run in very different circles from the ones you likely see at the yacht club.
We're a small, disreputable lot, but word travels quickly.
He hesitates, the smile slipping.
Your brother has gained notice lately. His writing is...
I know.
You've read his papers?
Pablo asks, his tone fairly incredulous. He is my brother.
But you don't share his views.
Of course not. He's still my brother. I don't always like him, don't always agree with him, but I love him. I think about it for a moment. I'm proud of him for believing in something so passionately, even if it isn't something I believe in, even as his beliefs drive a wedge between him and the rest of the family. He wouldn't be happy to be a replica of our father. He needs to be... is his own man. And at the same time, I worry about him. Constantly. With each day he's gone, it feels like he's further and further away from us.
And where do you fit in all of this?
Pablo asks. It's different for me. It's different to be a woman in Cuba.
Perhaps. But it doesn't have to be.
I shake my head. You hope for too much.
And you ask for too little.
Perhaps, I acknowledge. We break apart as the waiter sets our plates on the table. Pablo ordered us a dish that looks and smells wonderful, chunks of meat mixed into the rice. When the waiter leaves, I say calmly, How long will you be in Havana?
A few weeks, maybe. I'm not sure.
Then we'll have a few weeks.
I want to see you again, he says, his gaze intent. Can I see you again?
Perhaps I fell in love with him while walking on the Malecón. Or maybe it was at the party, or a few minutes ago when he spoke of his dreams for Cuba. Or maybe this is merely a precursor to love, an emotion singularly difficult to identify by name when you've yet to experience it. Maybe there are stages to it, like the moment when you wade into the ocean, right before the waves crash over your head. And maybe... Yes. Relief shines in his gaze. Pablo takes my hand, his thumb stroking the inside of my wrist, teasing the soft skin there.
You're going to be difficult to walk away from, aren't you?
He asks, his voice resigned. My heart thuds. I hope so. He drives me back to Miramar in a car he says he borrowed from a friend, dropping me off a few streets away from my house to avoid anyone seeing us together. Pablo turns in his seat to face me.
Would you like to go for a walk with me tomorrow? I have some business in the morning, but we could meet in the afternoon if you'd like. On the Malecón, near the Paseo del Prado.
With each day we spend together, the risk of discovery grows. And yet... Yes. We decide to meet at 2 o'clock, and then with a brush of his lips against my cheek, he is gone, leaving me walking down the streets of Miramar, my skin warm from his kiss. My home looms ahead, the pink edifice framed by looming palm trees. I walk toward the gate. A little scream escapes my lips as a hand closes down on my forearm, tugging me to the side of the fence, away from the view of the house.
Elisa.
Alejandro is suddenly there in front of me, his hand gripping my arm, pulling me out of view of the street until we're hidden by the massive walls flanking our estate. My brother's voice is low, urgent, so different from the teasing, mischievous boy I grew up beside. I'm not sure exactly when the change began, when he started looking at the society we inhabited with a different gaze than the rest of us. University, perhaps? He made it through a year at the University of Havana, before its doors shuttered, and at some point during that time he transformed from future sugar baron to revolutionary.
What are you doing here?
I hiss. My father made it clear the day he threw Alejandro out of the house. My brother could leave with the clothes on his back and nothing more, never to return again. His name expunged from the family Bible. The sugar empire left to whichever one of our future husbands was most deserving in our father's eyes, making us eminently marriageable. While our father's edict hasn't been strictly followed, Alejandro's visits are typically relegated to evenings and days when our parents aren't in residence. That our father is somewhere in the cavernous mansion, our parents returned from Varadero, makes this even more brazen.
What are you doing with him?
Alejandro asks, his eyes dark, ignoring my question completely. His gaze runs over my appearance as though I am a stranger to him. My heart pounds. Brothers, too, are both a curse and a blessing.
Nothing. That didn't look like nothing.
What did he see? Me in the car, walking away from Pablo? That moment when Pablo pressed his lips to my cheek? Well, it was. I lie. And it's not like you're in any position to lecture me about being circumspect in my behavior.
This isn't about being circumspect. It's about your safety. He's dangerous.
Not to me.
Especially to you. Do you know what they're doing in the Sierra Maestra? They're animals. Do you know how close he is to Fidel?
That name drips with scorn falling from my brother's lips. I'm not entirely shocked that my brother knows of Pablo. Despite their ideological differences, my brother is every inch my father's heir. He appreciates the value of information, hoarding it, trading it, using it to his advantage.
He's a good man.
Alejandro snorts.
Aren't we all?
Something in his tone breaks my heart. What has Batista done to us? What have we done to ourselves?
You're still a good man, Alejandro runs a hand through his hair, grimacing. The hand falls to his side and he stares at it, pained, as though blood drips from his gaunt fingers. Beatriz and I stood on the other side of the door, our ears pressed to the wood, listening as Alejandro and our father fought that fateful day in his study after the attack on the palace. I know my brother has killed in his private war for Cuba's future. Does he dream of the faces of the lives he took? Does he wonder if they had families? Wives? Children?
Beatriz and I have never spoken about what we overheard that day.
Speaking words gives them an unimaginable power. And we're full up on horrible things at the moment. Alejandro curses beneath his breath. What are you doing here? I ask again, my tone gentler. I need to speak to Beatriz. Beatriz needs to be more careful. I caught her in father's study. If it had been someone else who saw her rifling through his desk. Alejandro lets out another oath. I'll talk to her. Tell her to be more careful. He's the only one she listens to, and even that isn't saying much. How much longer is this going to continue? I ask, sagging against the wall. What do you mean? Aren't you tired? Don't you want to come home? I reach out, grabbing his arm, searching his eyes for the brother I've known for 19 years. Payne stares back at me. How can I? What am I supposed to do? We're your family. We love you. Do they love me? Perhaps you do, and Beatriz, and Isabel, and Maria. But our parents? He threw me out. You tried to kill the president, I whisper. What was he supposed to do? Understand. He doesn't. They don't. What you're trying to do, the system you want to destroy, is everything to them. It's our heritage. That's not something to be proud of. Not to you, but it is to them. The things you revile are the things they seek to maintain. He sighs, his expression haggard. You think I don't know that? That I don't see that there is little chance for us to be anything other than natural enemies? It's just politics, I argue. No, it's not. Not anymore. It's a part of me now. I can't bury it, and I can't destroy it. I can't go back to being the pampered prince who was set to inherit a sugar empire forged in other people's blood and sweat. I can't. He pushes off the wall, frustration etched all over his face. Tell Beatriz I'll meet her here tomorrow at noon. Alejandro, I can't wait any longer.
I meant what I said earlier.
That guy is no good for you. Stay away from him. He leans forward, embracing me in a quick hug. His body is much slighter than I remember. What has he been eating? Where has he been living? How is he surviving on his own? Alejandro, wait. He releases me abruptly, turning away, his strides lengthening with each step away from me. It hurts more than I thought it would to watch my own brother nearly run away from me. And minutes pass before I'm able to move again, standing on the pavement between the mansion that feels a bit like a mausoleum, and the brother who seeks to tear it down, piece by piece. Chapter 8. Weeks pass, my brother absent once more. My life a cycle of ordinary events interspersed with life-changing moments with Pablo. Whatever Pablo does for the revolutionaries, he steals into the city like a thief in the night, providing us with hours together before he's gone again. There's no rhythm to his schedule, at least none I can see, and while I could likely search for a pattern in the news of the day, there are some things I am unwilling to examine too closely. Sometimes he is in Havana for a few days at a time, and we are able to see each other once or twice. Other times I can get away for a few moments, and that is all. The letters have become a method of keeping him with me when we are forced to part. They exist between dates on the Malecón, 2 times when he took me to the cinema, the occasional furtive meal,
There's a tension in our interactions together that is stripped away when we write each other. An intimacy to the act of passing our most private thoughts to each other, creating pages and pages of familiarity. I turn his words over in my head when we are apart, inventing imaginary conversations between us, carrying him with me throughout the day, including him in parts of my life the flesh-and-blood man would never be allowed to experience. Our romance plays out as much in our letters as the few times we are able to see each other, so much so that at times the two blend together. The man who clasps my hand and walks beside me along the shore, and the version I've conjured in my mind from ink and paper. As greedy as I am for his words, though, there are some worries they can't soothe. It seems fair that my joy would be tempered by the reality of the situation, as though fate has stepped in and ordered this in a more equitable fashion. My family will never accept him. His friends will likely never accept me. Unless Batista falls, Pablo has no place in Havana. If Batista falls and the rebels succeed, what then? They have declared war on our way of life, on the wealthy, decried the position of families like mine, have urged the Cuban people to rise up against those in power. They have caused a rift in my family I now worry will never heal. "You're quiet today," my best friend Anna says, sipping a soda across from me. We're having lunch outside at a restaurant off the Plaza Vieja. We've been next-door neighbors my entire life. Only 9 months separate us. Our parents are cordial with one another, social contemporaries, but our friendship has developed organically. Two dark-haired girls playing beside each other in the backyard, plotting adventures within the confines of the high walls that contain us. My siblings are my friends because we are joined by birth, the bond strong and unbreakable. But there is freedom in having a friend with whom I can be myself, without the expectations and strings of family dynamics and drama. "Sorry," I reply. "I hope I'm not poor company. We have the sort of friendship where there's no need to fill the silence. We're content just being in each other's company. But I fear today I am stretching the limits of that. I have a lot on my mind." Alejandro came by the kitchen the other day and met with Beatriz. He was always a favorite with the staff. Do they suspect his real motives for staying away? Do they support his cause? Their lives would likely be better under Fidel. "You're not poor company. Is it your brother?" Anna asks, sympathy in her voice. "My brother and Pablo." With each day, each moment, I find myself falling for Pablo more and more. I'm in awe of him, I think. His convictions, his passion, his intelligence. He's so determined, so driven, his dedication admirable, even if we disagree on the best direction for Cuba's future. I've always told Anna everything, but I can't tell her the whole truth. Not about my brother, and certainly not about Pablo. I want to protect her, yes, but I'm also afraid she'll condemn me for getting involved with one of them. Her family isn't as close to the president as mine is, but still. Imaginary walls are forming in Cuba, running through families, marriages, friendships. "My brother came by the house the other day," I answer. "He doesn't look good." I've told Anna a different version of the story my parents have floated around, a bit closer to the truth, that Alejandro and my father had a falling out, prompting him to leave the house. Perhaps she suspects the rest of it and is merely too good of a friend to say anything. Who knows? I have far too many secrets these days to unravel them all. Her eyes widen. "Were your parents home?" "No, they're in the country. My father's dealing with a strike in one of his factories. My mother's playing Lady of the Manor, sipping coffee and sitting on the veranda." "I wish my parents would go to the country," she comments. "They invited Arturo Acosta over for dinner tonight, and I'm fairly certain they have nefarious intentions." "Still trying to get you engaged?" Her lip curls. "With fervor. I envy you. The older sisters. It would be nice to have some pressure taken away." "I don't think Isabel is far from getting engaged," I comment. "Really?" Things seem pretty serious between her and Alberto. Your mother is going to have a fit. My mother has all sorts of problems with her daughters. One is in love with a rebel, the other is dating someone who doesn't have the right last name, and Beatriz is, well, Beatriz. At this rate, Maria's the only one who won't turn out to be a massive disappointment, although she still has a few years in which to change that. I make a face. Probably. Although, if one of us... The square explodes into a fury of noise. Rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat. I freeze, my fingers close tightly around my fork, my hand in mid-air. It takes a moment for my brain to reconcile those noises. Firecrackers, cars backfiring, gunshots. Get down! Anna shouts, pushing me out of my stupor. Around us people yell and scream, the sound of crying filling the square. Rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat. I huddle under the table, my arms around Anna, praying one of the stray bullets won't hit us, that they won't come over here and shoot us. What has happened to our city? As quickly as it begins, it stops, a deathly silence descending over the block. My body quaking, I look out from under the table. My stomach clenches. People are on the floor, hiding behind cars. Food has spilled from the tables. A stray piece of crusty bread lying on the ground near my face, wine staining the pavement in a deep red. The busy city has stilled. There is no sign of the gunman. I fight the impulse to run, my gaze still searching. Will the police come and tell us it's all clear? Slowly, as if released from a spell, people begin to stand, shouting and gesturing. Anna and I rise from the ground. My legs shake, knees buckling as I grab the table for support. There's a gash on my palm from where I hit the ground, gravel embedded in my skin. The splatter of overturned black beans mars my hand. I wipe it on the linen napkin clutched in my white-knuckle fist. My fingers tremble as a new kind of worry fills me. It's a strange sensation to feel tethered to violence, to know that somewhere in the city, this explosion of gunfire might have touched someone close to me, either perpetrator or victim, my brother or Pablo. We drop money on the table for the meal, fleeing the restaurant. Around us people swarm the street, shopkeepers and restaurant owners emerging from their businesses, their voices carrying.
It was the rebels.
No, it was the mob.
Please, anyone could see they were Batista's men. The rebels are making progress in the mountains. What do you expect?
Batista's men? They were common criminals. The crime in this neighborhood gets worse each year. My niece was walking through the neighborhood the other night. Come on. I link arms with Anna, turning down the street, heading toward the car, panic filling my limbs, my head, my heart. I stop in my tracks. Two men lie face down on the ground in front of us less than 100 feet away, blood pooling beneath their bodies. Their lifeless eyes staring back at me. How can I not look? Relief fills me, swift and decisive. It isn't them. We're quiet on the drive back to Miramar. Anna's behind the wheel, a good thing considering how rattled I am by this afternoon's events. I sit in the passenger seat, my face tilted toward the open window, the breeze, the hint of salt in the air. Anything to get the scent and sight of blood from my mind. Nausea rolls around in my stomach. Anna breaks the silence first.
Do you think it will ever end?
The hopelessness in her voice breaks my heart. We don't talk about the violence, the madness in the city. But it's clear how much it has affected her, too.
I don't know, I answer.
Batista has been in power for over half my life. His first term, they say he was somewhat progressive. He gave us the 1940 Constitution we aspire to now, which, among other things, protected women from discrimination based on their gender, and gave them the right to demand equal pay. When he returned to the presidency years later, he became a dictator, populist government eschewed for corruption, a hero transformed to a villain. The American mafia runs Cuba now. Tourists swarm our beaches,
fill hotels Cubans cannot stay in, gamble in casinos built by avarice. For those of us who have known little else, it's hard to imagine a different version of Cuba. As though we can somehow turn back time and undo the changes his regime has implemented. And at the same time, I can't envision a future when the island isn't as fractured as it currently is. Anna turns onto our street, the sight of those swaying palm trees calming my nerves a bit. My gaze drifts and settles on a man standing next to a bright blue convertible. My heartbeat kicks up. Pablo is dressed casually today, smoking a cigar, far enough away from the house to keep it from appearing as though he's here for me, but close enough that I have no doubt he is. What is he doing here? I get out of the car, pleading a headache when Anna asks me if I want to come in for coffee. I keep my gaze peeled for anyone I know as I pass our house, walking toward Pablo. Thankfully, none of our neighbors are out. But one of the gardeners casts a curious glance my way. I stop a few feet away from Pablo, wanting more than anything to close the distance between us, to relax into his embrace. Even when reason dictates I cannot. Hello, I say, keeping my voice low. His smile sends a flash of heat through me, the fire of it instantly banked by the worry tinging his expression.
I'm sorry to come. I don't want to cause trouble for you. But I didn't want to leave without seeing you one last time.
My stomach lurches. You're leaving? I've only seen him once since he's been back in the city this trip. He comes and goes so frequently that it is difficult to settle into a routine of seeing each other, the parting and subsequent reunions granting all of our interactions with a sense of urgency.
My plans have changed, Pablo replies, his voice laced with regret.
He reaches out, surreptitiously capturing a strand of my hair and wrapping it around his fingers before releasing me with a sigh.
I have to leave Havana tomorrow. I'm sorry.
I knew this was coming. Knew he would have to leave again eventually. But there's still a wave of sadness and a sense of foreboding. When will we see each other again? Will we see each other again? The image of those dead men enters my mind once more, sending a shudder through my body. Will you take me somewhere? Anywhere? I need to get out of the city for a moment. I take a deep breath. The pounding in my chest growing more urgent, more insistent with each beat. I was at lunch with my friend Anna. There was a shooting. My voice shakes as I say the rest of it, and breaks over the part I cannot say aloud. I worried it was you lying dead on the ground. Pablo's eyes close once I finished, and he wraps his arms around me, reason be damned, pulling me into his embrace. The top of my head fits perfectly beneath his chin. His lips brush my hair. I lack the energy to worry about who will see us. He's silent for a long time, and then he pulls back and takes my hand without a word. He walks to the passenger side, holding the door open for me while I slide into the seat. In this moment, I'd follow him anywhere. We drive to the beach, to Selimar, in his borrowed car. He drapes his arm around my shoulders, my body pressed against his. With each moment we spend together, the knot inside my chest unravels a bit more, the nerves calming. I never imagined it would be like this. I envisioned pretty words and poetry, not this raw, primal thing that affects me now. Love is a remarkably physical entity. The beat of his pulse at his wrist, the heaving of his chest with each breath, the fluttering of lashes, the line of his jaw. I want to press my lips there, want to know every inch of his body, every movement, want the parts of him no one else sees. There's a greediness to love that I didn't anticipate either. When we reach the water, Pablo parks the car and we walk onto the beach. I reach down, removing my sandals and carrying them in my free hand. The other clasped in his. My toes sink in the sand as I walk to the shore, the waves lapping at my feet as I stare out to the sea. Was it you today? Your group that shot those men? I can't look at him. am not prepared to see the unvarnished truth in his eyes.
No.
I swallow. Has it been your group other times? It's a moment before he answers me, his gaze cast out to sea.
Yes.
I can't decide if I'm grateful for his honesty, or if I wish he'd lied instead. I look down at his hands, at the nicks and scrapes that once attracted me, so different from the men of my acquaintance. Now I see blood there, the same shadow of it that lingers on my brother's skin. How can you love someone who has taken a life? And yet, are they really different from the men who give orders behind desks? Who are equally responsible for the bloodshed, even if the violence is carried out on their authority and not by their neatly manicured hands? Where do matters of right and wrong fall in times of war? Are my brother and Pablo soldiers, even if they aren't in uniform? Or are they the criminals my father believes them to be? I fear I'm not equipped for these judgments, for the moral equivocacy war creates. More than anything, I wish the conflict would end. We're to have elections soon. Isn't that what you wanted? I ask. A chance for the people's voice to be heard? My voice sounds so very young, even to my own ears. What do I know of the emotions running through me, or of the things of which we speak? It's not merely gender or age that separates us. It's life experience. He has seen horrors I cannot fathom. Possesses ambitions I cannot imagine.
The elections only serve Batista, Pablo replies. He's not a stupid man. Havana is on the brink of revolt. He's fighting a losing battle in the countryside. These elections are Batista's attempt to appease the masses, creating the false appearance of democracy while pulling the strings for his puppet behind the scenes. Agüero's name is on the ballot, but Batista will call the shots if he's elected.
Comprehension dawns, bringing with it a fresh new horror. Is that why you're in the city? The election? The revolutionaries have been doing everything in their power to disrupt the election for months now. Pablo dodges my question.
Batista might hold Havana, but his control over the rest of the island is rapidly dwindling. There are places even he can't send his candidate for fear of what will happen, he boasts.
Fidel Castro's infamous threat to attack polling places has left many Cubans afraid to vote. His threats to jail and execute any candidate have left few men willing to run. And you support this? You agree with Fidel's actions? You call for democracy, and yet, what is this if not standing in the way of democracy?
It's preventing Batista from rigging another election.
By what? Rigging it before he can? No. Frustration fills his voice.
I'm not saying I agree with the threats, with the calls for violence, the attempts to suppress the election, but at the same time, Batista must be stopped. There's no clear answer here. He has all the power at his disposal, and unless we do something to wrest it away from him, this will never end. It is not enough to control the countryside. We need to control the entire country, including the government. We must drive him from Havana and show the people they no longer need to fear him and his firing squads, his secret police. We must give them the power to determine their own future, to decide the direction the country will take. But it's impossible to achieve that under the current system.
It sounds as though you're willing to play the villain in order to defeat one.
Please don't think that I have become as bad as Batista, that I am driven by the same power and greed that fuels him.
I'm afraid. And that thread of doubt threatens to unravel whatever relationship exists between us. I worry I'm surrounded by madmen who desire to burn the world down without thought for the consequences of their actions, without regard for all the innocent lives that will be charred by the flames.
Please don't look at me like that.
There's a plea in Pablo's voice I haven't heard before, and a hopelessness in his gaze. Like what?
Like I repulse you. As if I'm a monster like Batista and his cohorts. Please, Elisa.
I want to believe he's different, but right now both sides blur before my eyes, each claiming to possess the answer to Cuba's future, and willing to do abominable things in order to bring that future about. I don't understand. I'm trying, but it's difficult. Doesn't the violence wear on you? The killing? How can I not fight for my country? Nothing changes. If we continue on, if we don't alter our strategy, if we don't give them a war, then Cuba's current state, the government's failure, is our responsibility. Look at what Batista has turned us into. Look at what he has brought into the country. Gangsters and drugs. That is Batista's legacy. Not to mention the casinos, the brothels. He has handed our country over to the Americans. They have more power here in a foreign land than we have in our own home. And in turn they give Batista military aid. Weapons he uses against his people to maintain an iron grip on the country. The Americans preach liberty and freedom and democracy at home and practice tyranny throughout the rest of the world. Batista is a despot. You know this. He's right. But my father was one of the men who donated large sums of money to Batista's presidential campaign years ago, is frequently welcomed at the presidential palace. How can I condemn my own family? My parents? That's the difference between me and my brother. For better or worse, I am a Perez before I am a Cuban. Batista is bleeding us dry, Pablo continues. But because he is in bed with the Americans, he is untouchable. He has slaughtered tens of thousands of Cubans, and still he remains in power. We've endured his cruelty for far too long, and look where it has left us. And yet you think you and your friends can defeat him. The hubris in his words terrifies me. They are tempting God and the rules of nature to think that such a small group of men can do such a thing.
Yes.
And the Americans? If we are loud enough, if our voice is one, if we are successful in defeating him, then what can they do? They will accept us eventually. I'm not so sure about that. It all sounds so easy when he puts it that way. But if it is so easy, why has Batista held such power over the island for so long? And if you aren't successful? Then at least I will have spent my life serving a cause I believe in. A cause greater than myself. You think it's worth dying for? I try to imagine loving something so much that I would die for it. I would die for my family. For my child. For the man I loved. But a country? I cannot imagine anything more sacred than the willingness to give one's life for one's country, he answers, his voice solemn. Those are a martyr's words, and perhaps one day they will honor him in the annals of Cuban history. But I don't want to love a martyr. I don't want this war or bloodshed to touch my corner of the island more than it already has. I don't want to lose him. And suddenly I feel young and foolish. Impossibly coddled. He speaks of revolution, and I worry over my heart.
Then you are to sacrifice your life for Cuba?
Pablo attempts a smile. Hopefully not. Hopefully it won't come to that. And if it does? He wraps his arm around me, his forehead resting against mine, his lips inches from my mouth. At the end of the day, the only thing you have left is what you stand for. If I said nothing, if I did nothing, I could not live with myself. I would not be a man. This is the position I choose to take, and for better or worse, I will accept the consequences of my actions. I take a deep breath. Will I see you again? A tear trickles down my face. This feels like the end. Pablo kisses me, his arms wrapped around my waist, his body against mine. Have faith, Elisa. Will you come back when it's all over?
Yes.
Chapter 9. Marisol. I place the last letter in the box, momentarily speechless. After all the times I asked my grandmother about her life in Cuba, Why didn't she tell me she fell in love? What happened between them? Were they separated by the revolution? Did she forget him when she met my grandfather? My grandmother loved a revolutionary. I can't quite wrap my mind around it. My grandmother spent her days decrying Castro's regime, volunteering with groups speaking out against Cuba's government, donating money to causes designed to remove Fidel from power. She went to mass every Sunday, yet never took communion because she said her heart was filled with too much hatred for Fidel, for the men who stole her country from her. But she loved one. Did he come back to her? The letters in my hand fill me with questions, offering little in the way of answers. I have half of their romance. His letters to her. Letters my grandmother clearly thought were precious enough to save. But what of her words to him? Did she love him? And if so, why did they part? I need to know the end of the story. Need to know what happened, and Ana's earlier warning returns to me now. You can't understand what those times were like. How our world was shattered in the span of a few months. Whatever you find, don't judge her too harshly. She has to know some of it, at least. Do my great-aunts know? There's no mention of whether they were my grandmother's confidants in the letters. And there are so many pieces I need filled in for me. Is her lover alive? Is he still in Cuba? It's late, just after midnight according to the clock on my phone. But I can't sleep. Questions running through my mind. I want to share what I've learned with my father and sisters, and at the same time I need more information before, if I tell my family this news. Besides, Gula's telecommunications challenges don't make it easy. A part of me welcomed the reprieve from real life, but now I feel almost unbearably lonely, cut off from my friends and family. Why didn't my grandmother tell me these stories? Why didn't she trust me with this? I need fresh air. The four walls closing in on me. I grab a robe from my suitcase, belting it around my tank top and yoga pants, tiptoeing from the room. The Rodriguez's part of the house is quiet. Upstairs, their neighbors are still awake, domestic noises filtering through the water-stained ceiling. Footsteps thud, joined by the whoosh of water running down the pipes. The faint sound of a baby crying. The stairs creak, and I wince with each one, praying I don't wake the whole household. I walk past two closed doors and reach the back of the house, opening the glass door that leads to the Paladar's outdoor dining area overlooking the water. The wind whips my hair around my face, the lulling sound of the water calming my racing heart. Couldn't sleep? I whirl around. Luis lounges in one of the chairs previously inhabited by diners. A bottle of rum and a half-filled glass sit on the table in front of him. The moonlight shifts. I freeze. A sliver of light illuminates the left side of his face. His eyelid is bruised, a nasty-looking gash on his cheekbone that definitely wasn't there earlier this evening. I gasp. What happened? Are you okay? Luis reaches for the drink in front of him. He drains the liquid, setting the glass back on the table with an angry clank. I was robbed. Oh my God, what did they take? He unscrews the bottle, filling the glass. He doesn't drink it. Mostly my dignity. Did you report it to the police? His lips curve in a sardonic twist. I highly doubt the police would concern themselves with a simple robbery. I thought Gua didn't have a ton of crime. The guidebooks I read mentioned it was fairly safe, I say, feeling a bit foolish with the evidence to the contrary staring me in the face. He snorts. Don't believe everything you read. Crime doesn't cast the regime in a favorable light. Do you need something for your face? Antibiotic cream, maybe? Luis lifts his drink in a silent toast. I already have it. He gestures toward an empty chair on the other side of the table with his free hand, and it occurs to me that he just might be a little drunk. He's married. Go back to your room. Do not sit down. I sit, and when he slides the full glass across the table to me, the liquid sloshing around the rim, I don't hesitate as I lift the drink to my lips and drain it. The rum is better than expected. I've seen the brand before in my travels abroad, its distinctive logo jumping out at me as a sign of yet another thing Castro's government has taken. But I've never tried it. Was it once the Rodriguez families before the rum companies were nationalized? Are you sure you don't want to patch up your face? His eye looks like it must be throbbing. He'll have a hell of a bruise tomorrow. Luis shakes his head, seemingly unconcerned with the fact that he's sitting across from me, beaten and bloody. Men.
Rough night?
He gestures to the empty glass in my hand. It sounds like he's laughing at me again. You could say that. I slide the glass back across the table, and he refills it, taking another sip. His gaze is trained on the sea in front of him rather than on me, but I sense he's waiting for me to respond. And now, an ocean away from my family, I'm so in need of another person to talk to that I do. Your grandmother had a box of possessions my grandmother buried in her backyard when she left Cuba. There were letters in there, love letters, from a man. He was a revolutionary. Luis is silent, waiting for me to continue. Surprisingly, I do. I came to spread my grandmother's ashes because she asked me to, because I knew her better than anyone. Or thought I did. But now I don't feel like I knew her at all.
She never told you about the man?
No, I don't think anyone knew. At least if her sisters did, they never said anything. She told me so many stories about her life in Cuba, and this might be the most important one of all, and she never mentioned it. Not once. I've never been overly close to my father. He's an affectionate, if distant, parent. And my grandfather died when I was fairly young, so he's little more than a hazy memory. My mother left me in the care of others after the divorce. But my grandmother, she was the constant in my life, the person I knew would be there for me no matter what. The one person in my family who accepted me without reserve, who didn't attempt to shape me into the Perez mold. That makes this discrepancy between the woman I thought I knew and the woman she was cut the deepest.
What are you more upset about? The secrecy, or that your grandmother loves someone you wouldn't approve of?
I don't know, I admit. My grandparents' relationship was always built up as this great romance in my mind. I didn't have a lot of examples of healthy marriages to look up to. My parents certainly didn't fit the bill. I told myself that one day when I was older, my own relationship would look like theirs. That my children would never grow up in a home as divisive and fractured as the one I was raised in, but rather in a house filled with love and affection, like that of my grandparents. When I was a little girl, I used to beg my grandmother to tell me about how they met, I explained to Luis. They married a month later. Can you imagine that? Meeting someone and falling in love in the blink of an eye, and then marrying them a few weeks later? What is that if not great love? I can feel my skin flushing, the warmth prickling me, either from the rum or the topic. Luis stares at me, his expression inscrutable.
Your definition of romance is a singular one.
I blink.
What's that supposed to mean?
It sounds like he's faintly mocking me again.
You speak of passion, but what about companionship, mutual respect, friendship? Why do people always seize on the spark that can peter out as the measure of a relationship?
Does he have that spark with his wife, or is theirs a steady marriage, bolstered by the qualities he speaks of now? Those things are important, I concede, and my grandparents had them too. They were married for a long time. I very much doubt marriage can endure without those qualities. He tips his head in silent acknowledgement. But I'd want the spark, too, I say, my voice growing bolder. Luis laughs, the sound throaty and warm.
I don't doubt it.
He picks up the glass again, bringing it to his lips, his Adam's apple bobbing as he swallows. I can't look away.
I imagine a family like yours wouldn't be pleased to have a revolutionary in their midst, he says.
No, they wouldn't. I hesitate, torn between truth and caution. The rum loosens my tongue. I grew up hearing the worst about people like Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. There is somewhat of a divide between the Cubans who left and the Cubans who stayed.
There is affection and worry for family members and friends who remained behind, the intrinsic need to help anyone leave Gua. But there is also a schism. Some believe those who stayed contributed to Gua becoming what it is now, and in doing so, bolstered Fidel's power and legitimized it. People like my grandmother saw that as another betrayal, one that hurt especially because it came from her fellow Cubans. It is much easier to forgive the stranger than it is one you love. It's difficult to imagine my grandmother loving one of them.
Maybe he wasn't one of them, Luis suggests. Not everyone involved with Fidel's 26th of July movement was the same.
I'm embarrassed to admit my knowledge of Cuban political history is fairly limited. I know broad brushstrokes and anecdotes passed on by my grandmother and great-aunts, but I've rarely examined the nuances beyond the simple proposition that Castro and the communism he wrought were bad. It was a truth so strongly accepted in our family that questioning it, even in the smallest manner, was blasphemy. Who were the good ones, then? Luis drains his drink, pouring more rum into the glass. He slides it toward me, his fingers grazing mine as I grasp it. I lift the glass to my lips, the smell of rum filling my nostrils. The taste of him lingers somewhere on the glass and in the alcohol. Or perhaps it's just my imagination. He looks away, out to the sea again. I swallow, the rum sending a hot lick of fire down my throat, uncoiling in my belly.
I didn't necessarily say there were good ones, Luis clarifies. Merely men who died before they made the full transition from liberating heroes to tyrants. Men with good intentions at the very least, which is almost but not quite the same thing. I imagine a number of history's most notorious offenders started out with the very best intentions.
I slide the empty glass back to him. He removes the cap from the rum bottle, filling his glass, lifting it to his lips. I want to find him, I say, surprising myself even as the words leave my mouth. The need to learn what happened between them, the puzzle of it, is all-consuming now.
Of course you do, journalists.
Luis sighs, his expression hovering between resignation and amusement.
What do you know about him?
Not much. The letters were unsigned.
Probably to protect your grandmother if they were ever found. Were there any clues in the letters?
I think about it for a moment. He was an attorney. He met Fidel at the University of Havana while studying law. Luis flinches. The move nearly imperceptible and yet so slight it speaks volumes. Fidel casts a long shadow even in death.
That's not much to go on. You don't even know if he remained in Cuba or if he left. If he's still alive.
I know. Without the use of internet searches and genealogy sites, it will be a difficult endeavor.
Without a name, it seems insurmountable.
And still, I can't help but wonder if my grandmother sent me here because she knew I would need something to seize hold of once she was gone. Anna said that my grandmother asked her to keep the box for me. She had to have wanted me to have this part of her. But if she did, why did she never tell me herself? Your grandmother might know something, I add, recalling Anna's earlier words. Maybe there were other people around who are still in Gua. I want to try to find him, at least.
If he's still alive, if he's in Havana.
Perhaps I can meet with him.
Why?
Luis refills his drink, the alcohol swaying in the bottle. And then he slides the glass back to me.
This time I don't pick it up.
Because she feels like a stranger, and she was the only person in the world who really knew me. Understanding flashes in his eyes. A sense of recognition passes between us. It's obvious in his interactions with Anna that there's a special bond between them. That for a boy who lost his father at a young age, his grandmother has become a rock for the entire family, taking them into her home, running the paladar in an effort to give them a better life. Tell me you wouldn't do the same. I say.
If things were different, perhaps I would. But this isn't Miami. You need to be careful. Maybe he was a nice man nearly 60 years ago. That doesn't mean he's the same man your grandmother loved. You don't want to start asking questions, poking into things that will agitate the regime.
You think finding him, trying to, at least, would be dangerous? It seems such a simple thing, to want to know my family's history. The idea that the government would discover my efforts, or even care, is something I can't quite wrap my head around. It's a love affair, not political insurrection. Were my great-aunts right to worry about me coming to Cuba as much as they did? Yes, it could be dangerous. Marisol, an oath falls from his lips, and his chair slides against the chipped tile floor with a scrape. His face is flushed, though from the liquor or the conversation, I'm not sure. I should go to bed, he murmurs.
The image of him lying next to Cristina assails me.
Married. He's married. Thanks for the drink, I offer haltingly. He doesn't answer me. I look straight ahead, fighting the urge to turn around, to watch him walk away. I'm too old for a crush, especially on a married man. I came here to settle my grandmother's ashes, not for this.
My grandmother asked me to show you around Havana tomorrow,
Luis says behind me. I'll be downstairs at 10. I open my mouth to protest, but when I turn to tell him I'm fine without a tour guide, he's already gone. The morning comes far earlier than I'm prepared for. My grandmother's love affair spread out on the bedspread, a dull throb in my head from the alcohol. I fell asleep somewhere in the middle of rereading the letters after I returned to my room, my belly full of rum and my mind full of questions. Was he killed? Were they separated by the revolution? Did he leave Cuba as well? If they were divided by something trivial, why did she never mention him? I haven't forgotten Luisa's warning last night, but I can't ignore the desire to attempt to track down my grandmother's mysterious revolutionary. It feels like this, too, was a charge she gave me, a puzzle surrounding our family's past. And now that the temptation is here, I can't shake the desire to learn who he was and to find him. I choose my favorite maxi dress from my suitcase, pairing it with comfortable sandals and oversized sunglasses. I pretend I don't spend more time on my hair and makeup than normal, that I'm not preening. But I do, and I am. The ring on my hand weighs heavily, and I stare down at it, envisioning it on my grandmother's finger, as though I'm carrying a piece of her past along with me on my journey through Cuba. I hesitate, but slip the container with my grandmother's ashes into my bag as well. Perhaps it's a bit macabre to carry her bones with me, but who knows when inspiration will strike. I leave the room and walk down the stairs, my steps faltering when I spot Luis at the base waiting for me. He's wearing a white linen shirt and another pair of khaki pants. His eyelid is a spectacularly awful coloration of yellow and green, his cheekbones slightly swollen. He looks tired. Maybe I wasn't the only one who passed a sleepless night. Are you sure you don't want someone to take a look at that? I say in lieu of a greeting, gesturing toward his injured face. His lips quirk. I'm sure. How are you feeling? I ask, my tone gentling.
My eye's fine, my head, on the other hand.
His expression is sheepish, so out of character with the glimpses of his personality I've seen so far, intense and serious, that I can't help but grin in spite of my earlier resolve to be oh so stoic and proper. It was strong rum, I concede. My own head is fuzzy, the daylight shining through the windows in the entryway a little too bright.
Yes, it was.
His gaze drifts over my appearance.
Are you ready?
I am. I glance around the room. Is your grandmother here?
No. She usually goes to the market in the mornings to buy food. My mother went with her.
Do you know when she'll be back?
A couple of hours, maybe.
A faint smile tugs at the corners of his mouth.
She likes to visit with everyone while she's buying groceries. They all love her.
His smile disappears.
Let me guess. You want to ask her about the letters you found?
I do.
So despite what I told you, you're still determined to find this man?
I'm not going to do anything to put your grandmother at risk. But if she knows something, surely answering my questions wouldn't be dangerous.
Are you always this curious?
He says it like it's not a compliment.
I don't know. I guess. Besides, this isn't some stranger we're talking about. This is my grandmother, the woman who raised me. How can I not take this opportunity to learn more about her? Who knows when I'll have the opportunity to come to Gua again. If I'll have the opportunity to come to Gua again. These are uncertain times for both of our governments.